From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Joining me is Bennett Carroll, and very awesome that Jim Margulis is joining us from Regions Field down in Birmingham, Alabama. To quote Brent Musburger, you are looking live in Birmingham, and very awesome for Jim to be joining us. He's currently in the visiting press box at the Birmingham Barons Stadium as he's capturing as far as opening day for the Birmingham Barons, the AA affiliate for the Chicago White Sox down in Alabama. So, Jim, let's start there. How is the Birmingham experience so far?
This is my first time here, and it's a lovely stadium. I just had lunch at the brewery, or I should say early dinner at the brewery across the street, and that was nice just watching the ball game activities come and go. But their opening day got rained out, so they had a doubleheader for opening day, so an early start with a half-full fan. It wasn't quite the fanfare that you'd expect from an opening day, but it's, you know, kind of fitting, I guess, for just how the 2021 season's coming about and just the challenges posed to a team. Like, one thing I learned, no bat boys. There are no bat boys this year. They're like, the players are having to retrieve foul balls and umpires gonna have to, like, just they're just reducing on-field personnel, and so that's a case where, you know, they have them. So it's strange, but it's they're making do and getting by.
That is strange. Is that a money thing or is that a COVID thing?
I think it's a COVID thing. Like, they just really don't have a whole lot of access points to the field. And I think I was talking to Kurt Bloom, a friend of the podcast, Kurt Bloom, before the game, and he said that, like, his access is limited and he has to talk to guys basically from the stands. So it's just how they're doing it. They're being super safe. And I guess, you know, it's also a personnel thing. As they get back to full strength and full revenue, they probably have to get by a little bit in terms of fewer personnel. But it's, you know, they're kind of scrambling, but I think every team is, and just the way it is right now.
So Governor Pritzker in Illinois said today that Illinois is on track to go to phase five on June 11th. So that's given a lot of people hope that in Illinois we can go back to full capacity pre-pandemic days. Any insight in what Birmingham, like what they're going to be able to do, if they have any insight on when things are going to be able to expand and get closer to normal for them at Regions Field?
Not yet, but I know that in Nashville, not that, you know, every state and city has the same rules, but Nashville, the city has been pretty conservative in terms of how to open things up, and they're going full capacity next week. I have tickets to the second game of the season when it's like 25%, and I felt like okay about that. But they're going from 25 to 100. And so I'm not quite ready to sit like in full capacity stands yet with strangers. Because you look at the mask adherence in the stands, it's not great. But then again, like, I mean, if people are sitting in their bubbles, you know, with people they know and who they live with and not close to anybody else, I don't see the big deal. But if you take that discipline and apply it to strangers commingling shoulder to shoulder, knee to back, when it comes to seats and such. It's, maybe not yet for me. I'm not quite there. So I'm happy to be going for the first week when it's limited. Everybody's in pods. Everybody can sit with their bubble. And that's more my speed right now.
All right. Well, thanks for the report down in Birmingham. Birmingham's a great place. If you haven't been down there to watch the White Sox AA affiliate, I did it a couple of years ago. Jim is down there now. I highly recommend it. It's a great experience, especially just for like a weekend. You can easily do Birmingham in a weekend. And Jim will have more about the Birmingham experience and how the Barons are doing on SoxMachine.com. But let's get into, I think, what is a very popular topic. I was lucky to join Molly at Haw on 670 The Score as far as the morning show to talk about this particular topic as far as the troubles with Tony La Russa. And this stems from the 1-0 loss that the White Sox had in 10 innings against the Cincinnati Reds. It is another game that potentially, with some better decision-making from Tony La Russa, the Chicago White Sox would have gotten a better chance as far as winning. And Jim, you wrote about it today as far as on SoxMachine.com, and you and I share a lot as far as the same viewpoints. It's just not understanding the extra innings rule, where he thought Liam Hendricks had to be the runner on second base when that wasn't the case. But there were multiple mistakes as well in that 10th inning that Tony La Russa decided to make, but these decisions he's making follows up on a column you wrote a little while ago that these are not one-off mistakes. This is a bad pattern of mistakes for Tony La Russa. we want to break that down as far as your thoughts on the other decisions that Tony La Russa got wrong and seems to be repeating.
Well, first of all, Bennett, shut up. And then when it was funny, when I was driving down here, I stopped at a rest area just over the border in Alabama. I checked my phone to see the score. I saw it was 0-0 in the 10th inning and runners on the corners. And I was like, well, I could sit here and watch my phone, but it's the 10th inning and it's the White Sox. So no, I knew you were recapping the game and I just wasn't, you know, it wasn't my responsibility. Finally, it wasn't my responsibility to watch. So I spared myself. So I didn't see how it went down in real time. I watched it after the fact. But yeah, it's just, it's with, you know, I guess, you know, I wrote the headline of my post was that the game keeps finding Tony La Russa. And it's part of it because the game keeps finding Larry Garcia and Billy Hamilton to do. It's like the two weakest parts in the lineup. And rallies always get to them late, you know, extra innings start with them or end with them. It just, there's no way to get away from them. And it feels the same thing with La Russa at the managerial level. Like there's no way to get away from him. They aren't playing games where his, or they're not getting away from him, like in terms of the score or the situations. Like there's a lot of games that require finessing and require substitutions and require pinch hitting and defensive alignments that might not be traditional, but might require the bats to make it happen. And it, you know, he keeps having to show that he's ready to manage an American League team in 2021. And he's had some successes when it comes to how he's deploying players. I would say more on the pitching side, starting pitching side, he's been fine. Or I should say like with the Rodon, Kopech guys who have innings limitations, he's doing a fine job with them. But when it comes to just the big picture stuff, it still seems like it's escaping him. And when you have James Fegan telling him the rules and having to like explain it, it sounded like I didn't basically on the accounts, like he had to explain it to him multiple times, actually like read it to him verbatim in order for him to get to understand the way you like have to like tell somebody how to use a cell phone, or they would say a VCR back in the old days, but now it's cell phone. It's that's a little just discouraging, disheartening, and really just indulges all the jokes that people had and all the reflexive criticisms, all the ways that people thought it wasn't going to work. Like, I didn't think it was going to work either and not work well, but not like this so soon.
And that's a good point because, Bennett, we are just 29 games into the season. We have another 133 games left to go. And it's a small sample size, technically, as far as 29 games go. And we've seen these types of mistakes made repeatedly. What is your confidence level, Bennett, in Tony La Russa for the rest of the season managing this White Sox team?
I hope the offense scores 8 runs every game so we don't have to worry about it. The easy answer is I think after the first couple, because there, you know, the first week there were a couple like smaller mistakes that may have bit you, but whatever, you know, it was all right. He's rusty, you know, he hasn't managed a game, a real game in 10 years. Some stuff has definitely changed, but this is at least the second time there's been a rule he hasn't known about or he hasn't sure about. And, you know, like there are things like, as Jim said, the stuff with Kopech has been perfect. It is exactly what you'd want from Kopech. Rodon has pitched out of his mind and been used well, but it's just, it's one of those things where it's enough that you can, as you see on Twitter, you can point the blame at other people, but it just comes up in those moments where you, if you make the right decision, it will help so much more, even on the off days, even on the days where there are other excuses. It's just, I don't have confidence is the answer. Hoping for something to change, but knowing it won't, basically, is where I'm at.
Yeah, and you still have the crowd that's like, well, managers don't matter that much. And they're pointing at the White Sox only had 2 hits. How do you expect this team to win with only 2 hits? But it was 0-0 going into the 10th inning, and you are given a runner on second base. As a manager, you have the ability as far as decision-making, and you have with that ability, you got to get that runner home. And if the White Sox score that runner from second base, they're up 1-0, and you're having your $54 million closer hoping that he can hold on to a one-run lead, even though they have a runner on second base, and you can steal a win. I just think that so far in these first 29 games, Jim, the White Sox are not stealing a lot of wins out of their 16 that they have won so far. They have been giving away wins out of the first 29, and I really hope this doesn't bite them later in the season. That's always been one of my chief concerns, even since the Anaheim series, or the series in Anaheim, I should say, against the Los Angeles Angels, where they coughed up two of those games in that series. It's like, I hope that this doesn't bite them at the end. And right now they're a half game behind Cleveland in the American League Central as far as the division. And we can bring up those standings here in a moment. But this brings the topic of Tony La Russa is now a hurdle, Jim, for the White Sox, instead of being an aid. And that cannot happen for this particular White Sox team. And you even have folks in Chicago radio now questioning, man, why did you get rid of Rick Renteria if this is what Tony La Russa is? How big of a hurdle do you think La Russa is? And just looking back at recent history with major league teams, we have seen examples of teams still overcoming a manager that, you know, maybe too far over their head as far as a particular job, but still be successful. Can the White Sox still be successful and overcome the mistakes that La Russa is making?
They can. But, you know, you mentioned the, you know, I guess the reflexive defense of La Russa saying, well, you know, they didn't hit with runners in score position. They didn't score a run. How are you supposed to get wins when the offense didn't show up? That is true. However, in this year and recent, you know, the way offense has slid over recent years, and now there are three no hitters or three no hit games thrown this year. You know, they're going to be a lot more low scoring games or games where the offense doesn't show up. And, you know, what do you do? Like when it comes to, you know, the offense, like you're going to have a lot more games, I think, this year, especially relative to like, say, maybe even 2018, to where like a team goes 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. Just going to be like the norm. And, you know, I'm reading about other teams. Like I mentioned, the Yankees at the time, they were struggling massively with runners in scoring position. The Twins, I think, are 0-for-7 in extra innings.
Yes.
So they have their own problem. Like, you know, no team is unique when it comes to just executing at the plate in clutch situations because the pitching steps up. The pitching is the best you can possibly face in high leverage situations. So that's just how it is this year. So it does magnify the impact of situations where a manager can make a difference. And then you have situations like, you know, like Bennett mentioned, the replay situation in the opening series, then this situation now where they, you know, didn't know the rules. And, you know, it's one-off games and they lose a game and, you know, the offense has shown up, no big deal. But these are mistakes that coaching staff should be ready for, managers should know. These are the things like you can control. Like hitting is a reflex based on thousands and thousands of reps at different levels coached up against like an accelerating level of competition. And you're making decisions in microseconds. Same thing like in the field, you're making like reflexive decisions based on information you're processing really quickly in rapid succession based on what your eyes or even the corners of your eyes are telling you. But like managing is you should know the rule book before the game. You should know, you should have like an idea of how innings is going to play out before they happen. When you have failure at this level, the closeness of the games and the leverage situations, they magnify the mistakes that they're making, the very preventable mistakes they're making at the level. So, you know, it is a defense that managers don't make or break a team, but I think this year there are going to be games that are made or broken by decisions made in the dugout.
And this upcoming stretch, and again, I'll bring up as far as the American League Central standings, because one thing that people are pointing out, Bennett, is the run differential for the White Sox. It's all right, guys. Okay, La Russa is making mistakes. The White Sox are only a half game back of Cleveland, but look at their run differential. And this is what I say about that, Bennett, because I do like run differential. Because run differential tells me what your expected win-loss record should be. And the White Sox should be leading the American League Central right now. We shouldn't be talking about the White Sox a half game back of Cleveland for first place. We should be talking about the White Sox having a 2.5 game lead in the American League Central. And if you want to quantify as far as the mistakes that La Russa has made, or even some of the issues at the bullpen, not able to hold the lead and coughing up those four games with having a lead in the seventh inning or later. This is where I've highlighted in the red box. The expected win-loss record now for the Chicago White Sox should be 18-11. And people will say, well, it's 29 games in, two games. It's not that big. It's not that, you know, big of a difference. But if this continues throughout the entire season, this could easily add up to a 10-win difference between what the White Sox finished with 2021 and what they were expected to win in 2021.
Yeah, first of all, shout out Pythagoras. Great formula. Second of all, and also, even if it's two games, like, as we've said, like, two games matter if they're in April, if they're in September. But, yeah, at the rate we're going with losing games based on the run differential, it's an issue. And just to tag back to Jim's point, like, the offense isn't showing up once or twice a week, and they're still the best offense in baseball. So it's this weird struggle between the offense is bad, but also it's really good. And I think that really actually summarizes 2021 well, is that they're the best, but they're also really garbage a couple days a week. But, yeah, like, as easy as it is to go, well, you know, you don't win your games on the expected win loss, it's, or the run differential, it's true, but you can lose the game, the close games in those situations. And it's unfortunate to see, and hopefully does not continue, but I still have no confidence.
Well, for the Chicago White Sox, after 29 games, we are now in the gauntlet stage of their schedule. This is going to be 68 games the next 76 days for the Chicago White Sox. They're going to play 16 games against the Minnesota Twins during this stretch. They're going to play 10 games against the Detroit Tigers. They have 7 games against the Kansas City Royals, Baltimore Orioles, and Houston Astros, 4 games against Cleveland, 3 games against the Yankees, Blue Jays, Mariners, Rays, and Cardinals, and a 2-game series in Pittsburgh during this stretch. So again, it's 68 games in 76 days. It ends 10 days before the trade deadline and through the All-Star break. And we've been talking about this since the beginning of the season, Jim, this gauntlet of the part of the season. We thought having 16 games in such a short time period against the Minnesota Twins would really make the AL Central race, instead of being pushed back to September and everybody biting their fingernails, bring it all the way up before the All-Star break, because you're really going to know where you sit in the American League Central as the Chicago White Sox. And even from a Minnesota Twins perspective as well, having so many games against each other, being one of the first series after the All-Star break. I mean, you're almost done with the season series before the trade deadline. Now entering this stage, and even talking about La Russa, we've mentioned the bullpen a few times struggling. I still feel like this is a critical part of the White Sox schedule, especially since I think Rick Hahn is looking for help to replace, as far as the production for Luis Robert out in center field. Maybe they wait and see what Adam Engel can do. But it's tough with his injury right now. He's going to be out for the rest of the month of May, and he won't be coming back at the earliest until the beginning part of June, if he does come back, knock on wood, that changes. But, you know, for this stretch for the White Sox, and, you know, the Minnesota Twins are not good right now. They lost again. They lost the series to the Texas Rangers, which is surprising. How critical do you view this stretch now after the first 30 games of the season and kind of seeing where everybody is in the standings?
I guess it depends on how you approach the season as a whole. Like, it's critical in terms of the Twins are down. You can kick them while they're down. Mm-hmm. Byron Buxton just tweaked a hip, like running to first, like Luis Robert did, and it didn't hurt it to the extent that Robert did. Like, they said he's day to day right now, but he had to leave the game. And just, you know, Kirilloff is out with a wrist injury. Maeda hasn't looked right, although he pitched better his last time out. The bullpen's been a mess. Even with Colome out, they haven't been able to replace his innings. So they're a mess right now. Rocco Baldelli is searching for answers. And so if you can like beat them up now and maybe discourage them and take away like certain moves they might make if they were closer, that's something you want to do. But I think when I look at the shape of the Central, I look at the Cleveland beating up on the Royals and taking it to Danny Duffy a little bit, and Shane Bieber looking wobbly but coming back and beating Kansas City. I think this is going to be like a three and a half team race that they might all have issues at different times. They might just, you know, some team might look like they're running away with it, then get dragged back to the pack because of an injury. You might have like, you know, depending on the Royals looking feisty one week and then looking beatable next week because their bullpen dissolves, like the Twins might be, you know, be off and on based on how healthy they are. So I think, you know, should they get off to a rough start with this stretch, it won't be, you know, like I won't be like pounding the table to sell, 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 because I think based on just how many injuries there are, based on just how uneven the level of performance has been across the American League, basically, that it's hard to panic too much. There's just so many, this is such a weird year. The pitching is so dominant. The performances are so uneven. I really don't know what to do with this information. So basically I think it's a strength of what you know. When you say, I don't know, you're comfortable saying that. I'm very comfortable saying, I don't know.
How about you, Bennett, as far as the gauntlet here, again, these 68 games in 76 days, how critical do you view this stretch for the White Sox?
I mean, literally, like we know where the Twins are right now, and we also know the Twins can turn it on like that. They have that kind of ability. So 16 in 2 months, that's just so much.
It's a lot. It is a lot.
Like literally, it's going to be every midweek series for like two months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's huge. Without getting into, you need to beat this team this many times and take them out and do this. Like, it's crucial that you at least are keeping pace, that you're, if the Twins do start to come back and you know you got six games in 10 days with them around the corner, you gotta have that in the back of your mind. It's so many games and it's so quick. Like, July is going to be here in like a week at this rate, and you're going to have 15 more games after that against, you know, just insane.
The way I look at it is this: with the way that the Minnesota Twins have started, that if the White Sox can, in the first 12 games of that series, are up eight games to four, and they build on their lead on the Minnesota Twins another four, I think, Jim, you could maybe convince Twins front office to not buy. Mm-hmm. And that will make the White Sox life a lot easier after the trade deadline, where you beat them up so much and they're so far behind that they just look at their roster and they say 2021 is not our year. And that makes your life a lot easier from a White Sox perspective. And then it really depends on what you do against Kansas City during that stretch. It's just a few games that they have against the Royals. And the White Sox are only going to see Cleveland for four games during the 68-game stretch. So we'll see more of Cleveland and the White Sox in August and in September. And maybe Cleveland fades right now. They're playing some good baseball. They've won five straight to lead the American League Central. But This is the part of the schedule that I look at, Jim, especially 16 games against the Twins and 10 games against the Tigers. If both of these teams are what their winning percentages are, this should be the opportunity, even for the White Sox dealing with the bullpen, not being the super bullpen, even having to overcome Tony La Russa's decision-making when games are tight or games in extra innings. This team, despite even the injuries as well, should be able to take advantage of this stretch, really pad as far as the distance between them and the Minnesota Twins. And I'm expecting the White Sox, after this 68-game stretch, to have the lead in the American League Central with a few games between them and whoever is going to be in second place in the American League Central at that point. That's kind of how I see as far as this gauntlet for the next 76 days for the White Sox, and why I think it's really important that whatever mistakes that they're making right now, they really need to limit those mistakes, because you don't want to be coughing up games during this stretch. Because if the Twins do get hot and they play at the level that we thought they were going to play before the season, you just don't have, you only have three more games to play catch up with them after July.
Yeah, I have two visuals going through my head right now. One is when I was describing the Central, I had like a, do you ever see the Japanese game show Slippery Stairs?
Where once. It's like, yeah, yeah, I know. Just, yeah.
But basically, like, that's how I think the Central is going to be. Like, every, you know, team is going to have a carefully plotted out strategy to get to the top, and then like one false move or like one clip of the ankle is going to send them tumbling back down. So that's kind of how I figured the Central. I think like the these games against the Twins and Royals and so forth kind of remind me of a Royal Rumble in that you have like, especially like the Twins, like when you think about like if you're in a Royal Rumble, and I've never been in one, but let's say I had. And let's say I'm like, let's say I'm like, you know, a chiseled 290 pounds. Like I'm looking around the ring and I say like, well, I know, you know, this guy can't toss me out. This guy can't get the leverage to toss me out. But that guy, you know, he doesn't look like much, but he can actually, you know, toss me out of the ring. I better keep an eye on him, or I better team up early with somebody else to toss him out of the ring because I know he can eliminate me later. That's kind of how I look at the White Sox looking at the Twins. Like if they can like team up with like, say, the Rangers, you know, taking 3 out of 4 or another series like where the Twins don't look right. And then like, you know, have their own 3 of 4 to, you know, all of a sudden the Twins have lost 6 of 8 and now they're, you know, 8 games back or whatnot. And, you know, they have injuries and if, you know, young guys aren't ready to help and they not quite ready to pack it in, but not ready to add. And I think that's kind of how they have to look at it. Like, I think every week is going to be a challenge for the White Sox based on who's healthy, given just how precarious the lack of depth is. But if they can take it like week by week and see what they have, see who they're up against, see who they have, and see what their unique struggles are to the season, I think that's going to be how teams survive this year.
Now I need the wrestling faction of White Sox Twitter to make Jim a wrestler.
I'll call Dick. I got Dick the Knife on speed dial. Don't worry.
All right, excellent. I need to see this. I need to see this with Jim dropping the Royal Rumble.
Eric Dan Szymborski, he dust off his raw skills.
Oh, man. All right. So that's the White Sox as far as dealing with Tony La Russa and looking ahead as far as their schedule with the gauntlet. We'll preview this upcoming weekend series against Kansas City as it does really favor the White Sox on the pitching side. But before we get to there, we got to address this rumor real quick. Albert Pujols. Bennett, the simple answer is no. But the Angels DFA'd
to elaborate, laughter.
Yeah. And I feel like this is a move they should have made before the season. So at least he can go into free agency and sign with someone. But now in May and they DFA him, the options are going to be limited. It sounds like he still wants to play. And immediately there is the suggestion that, you know what, the team that makes the most sense in signing Albert Pujols is the Chicago White Sox because of Tony La Russa. And that's exactly what the White Sox need. Another first base DH type that can't run and is not hitting very well. But Bob Nightingale, the official White Sox speaker from USA Today, says the White Sox are not interested. Do you buy that, Bennett? Do you see Albert Pujols in a White Sox uniform?
No, I've been thinking about it this way. And the last time the White Sox were legitimately relevant in baseball, like actually competitive, was, you know, 2008 was that obviously that playoff run, that was peak. The White Sox are just going to go out and get the veteran. They got Griffey that year. They got me. So if people haven't paid attention to the White Sox for a decade, of course they're going to do that. They were the betting favorites on it. No, they're not. If they sign Albert Pujols, I don't have anything embarrassing I can do, but I would do something embarrassing if they did. No, they're not signing Albert Pujols.
How about you, Jim? Do you think the White Sox sign Albert Pujols?
No, and especially with Nightingale saying that, just like it's sad the way that just people thought, hey, White Sox, to the point where Nightingale had to say something to the negative. And I think it was Mark Feinsand that called it a perfect place. And on one hand, you know, no, because they have like 5 first base DHs already. And, you know, especially, you know, maybe if your mean Mercedes wasn't your mean Mercedes, all capital letters, it was more just one of the many fringe candidates they were throwing in there. Maybe you could see adding him, but no, it's like, I guess like the only case it's like perfect is if like you really treat like the White Sox as like a place where people on the end of their tail end of careers can go to rest comfortably, like a hospice almost. And I don't think it's quite that grave. So
it's baseball's hospice.
Yeah. See, they've been that before, but not right now. And I also thought like, you know, I know Jose Abreu idolizes Albert Pujols, and that's another reason why I wouldn't want to see Pujols, you know, among the baseball reasons, but other reasons I wouldn't want to see Pujols come here is like, you know, Abreu has already kind of had to go over the top with praising La Russa in the face of public criticism because he's an organizational soldier and is not going to speak poorly of his superiors. He knows like how it works, but you know, if Pujols are brought on and if you're hitting, you know, like, you know, in the hundred, you know, 100s, and we're offering nothing, and you'd have to have Abreu saying like, well, he's so dear and dear and treasured to me. And just, you'd feel awful about having Abreu to have to come out and say that. So it might be like a nice for him to have his friend and mentor there, but also I think it'd just be a profound disservice to have him come out and speak on behalf of the move and defend a friend. And I just don't think it would serve anybody well.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but never say never with the Chicago White Sox. We didn't think that Tony La Russa was going to be the manager.
Yeah, although Nightingale said La Russa is a possibility. Here he's saying that Pujols is not, so I think we're safe.
Yeah, I think we're safe. Let's move on next as far as the White Sox upcoming series, as they had the night off and started a three-game series Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as they head to Kansas City. The Kansas City Royals are struggling a little bit. They are now 16-14 on the season. They have lost five straight games. Runs per game, 4.43 runs per game. They are scoring. Runs allowed per game. The bullpen has been shaky lately, and the starting pitching has not been good for Kansas City. That's been a problem for them all season long. They are allowing 4.9 runs per game. So back to run differential, they are in the negative, and they are overachieving right now to start the 2021 season. So let's take a look at the probable pitchers between the Kansas City Royals and the Chicago White Sox. Starting on Friday, May 7th at 7:10 p.m. Central Time, it is Carlos Rodon for the White Sox against Brad Keller, who has been terrible. And if the White Sox don't win this game, I'm going to be scratching my head. On Saturday, it's Lance Lynn again. He'll be pitching on Saturday, May 8th. This is a 6:10 p.m. Central Time start. Interesting. The Royals are going to be sending out Daniel Lynch, who'll be making his second career start. He is a lefty, and he's one of their top pitching prospects in their farm system. So we'll see on how the White Sox do against Daniel Lynch in his second ever start in the majors. And on Sunday, May 9th, it is Lucas Giolito. This is a 1:10 p.m. Central Time start, and he'll be going up against Mike Minor, again, another lefty. But the White Sox really struggled to hit Mike Minor in his last start, as the White Sox lost that game to Kansas City in Chicago a few weeks ago in early April. So, Bennett, here we are. Three more games against Kansas City, an opportunity for the White Sox to add some distance. The way I look at it as far as this series, the pitching matchups really favor the White Sox in this series. And when you have someone like Brad Keller, who has been terrible, and I'm still surprised he's starting games for Kansas City, and you got two lefties on the mound, on paper, this is a series the White Sox should win. How do you feel about this series for the White Sox?
Yeah, if you don't come out with two or three here, something went wrong. And you can pick which one they lose. I'm going to say it's not Brad Keller because, you know, Brad Keller sucks. That's a personal vendetta. But
I'm glad you cleared that up.
Just to be clear. But, they'll drop one of those games. It might be through a certain manager. I won't tell you which bad St. Louis Cardinals manager will be the cause of it, whether it be Tony La Russa or Mike Matheny. But, you know, if you don't come out with at least two of three, something went wrong.
How about you, Jim? How do you feel about this series for the White Sox?
Well, it feels like, you know, we've been talking about how the White Sox haven't stolen games and how, you know, they're struggling in the, you know, 42 that Hawk Harrelson said define a team over the course of a season. I think the Royals had the opposite fortune over the course of the first few weeks. They had like a lot of charmed games, a lot of crazy walk-offs, a lot of comebacks, extra innings they're well designed for, because I think they can score one runner pretty well. Like, they're pretty used to small ball, contact speed, that sort of thing. So, you know, that's the case where they were kind of the opposite. But when you look at sheer talent, now they're kind of losing games based on talent, on pitching talent, not holding leads. So I think they're coming back to earth a little bit. It would be nice to see them beat Mike Minor, because Mike Minor was the guy who ended the White Sox winning streak against left-handed starters. Daniel Lynch, I think, will be fine just because he doesn't throw a changeup. I think when it comes to lefties succeeding against the White Sox, it's usually the fastball changeup combination that takes them a while to catch on to it. So I like that matchup there. I think it's just going to be the, you know, like we talked about before, I guess, to bring this full circle, because you were a professional like that, like the shapes of games, like just, you know, having innings, having rallies not be contingent on the bottom three of the order, not having, you know, Leury García and Billy Hamilton decide games, having, you know, scoring runs early, hitting the ball over the fence. I think it's supposed to be relatively warm in Kansas City, so hopefully the ball travels and they can score that way. But they're just going to have to play more, I think, big boy ball in order to offset the issues that they're having executing with the, I guess, the speed-oriented players and manager who tends to fall into the traps that small ball offers and often ruins a team for.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of those points, Jim, and I'm with you, Bennett, as well. The White Sox should win at least 2 out of 3. I see where they could sweep Kansas City. You'll also hear from analysts saying this is a tricky situation because the Royals have lost 5 games in a row. If the White Sox sweep them, that's 8 games in a row they would have lost. And, you know, you'll hear the analysts, former players say, I'd rather face a team that's on a 5-game winning streak than the team that's on a 5-game losing streak. Especially that Friday night game for Kansas City and how they may want to come out and try to, you know, get rid of the bad taste in their mouths from the Cleveland series and try to beat up on the White Sox. But the White Sox won 9 out of 10 games against Kansas City last year. They are currently 1-1 in the season series. They'll make up that game next weekend in Chicago, which next Friday will be a doubleheader, 7-inning doubleheaders. You know how much I love those. And yeah, so it's going to be 7 games between the Royals and White Sox in the next 2 weekends. So lots of Kansas City, and hopefully the White Sox take advantage of it, not only this weekend, but next weekend as well as the gauntlet begins. And despite all the problems with Tony La Russa and having to overcome some pretty significant injuries and the bullpen being shaky, I'm still confident the White Sox can play good enough baseball in these next 76 days where they could win the American League Central. But as our job, as far as providing content and analyzing the season, you want to point out the things that could stop the White Sox so they can identify them and overcome them. And as Jim mentioned, coming full circle, hopefully Tony La Russa doesn't have to be put into a situation where he has to make a critical decision, especially extra innings. It'd make life a lot easier for everyone involved if the White Sox come out and they smack the Royals in the mouth early and they go into autopilot coasting to wins during the weekend, because I think, again, this matches up well for the White Sox.
Yeah, you know how that 5-game losing streak thing isn't true? If a team never wanted to play a team that's on a 5-game losing streak, nobody would ever want to play the Detroit Tigers. And everybody wants to play the Detroit Tigers.
That's so true. That is very true. The Tigers lost again today in Fenway. So they're on the road to the number one pick in 2022. But that will do it for this episode of Sox Machine Live. Thank you, everyone, for watching the live stream on youtube.com/Sox Machine. If you don't get an opportunity to watch the live stream because life gets in the way, don't worry. You could always listen to the audio version of the show wherever you listen to podcasts in the Sox Machine podcast feed. You could also follow us on Twitter @Sox Machine. And for those that are watching the video streams, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. If you enjoy our work and you want more, you can get more by signing up at patreon.com/Sox Machine, where we have several different tiers of support, where you get an ad-free version, not only as far as the podcast, but also the website, exclusive content, such as the 2021 Major League Baseball Draft Watch, which I just recently put up the top 100 prospect list. You also get an opportunity to ask questions to our podcast guests, which over the weekend, we're going to have one of our best friends of the show, Jim Callis, sit down with me. We're going to record a new podcast to talk about his latest mock draft for the upcoming Major League Baseball draft and the White Sox top 30 prospects as the minor league baseball season has begun. And our Patreon supporters get to have a special PO Sox segment with Jim Callis. So again, if you enjoy our work and you want more and you'd like to help support us, go to patreon.com/SoxMachine to sign up today. Alongside Bennett Carroll and Jim Margulis, who is currently in Birmingham. And let's blow this up from Regions Field for all of those that are listening to audio. You missed out. But for all of those that are on YouTube right now, you're looking live in Birmingham, Alabama, as the Barons are about set to play tonight at Regions Field. Thank you so much for watching and listening to Sox Machine Live.